that I don't, in terms of updates, I mean, I really wanted all of you to be able to talk to each other and to, you know, ask questions and things of that nature. And I do want to also talk about plans for our meeting schedule going forward. So I'm going to share my screen. All right, I just have to make a few adjustments so I can see all of you as well. So are you guys, you should be seeing my slides at this point.
Yes, we could.
Awesome. Thanks, Maria. All right. So just quickly, kind of some of the things that I wanted to check in about today, updates. In our last meeting locked with the supervisors, we touched upon some of these items as well. So I'm hoping that some of them have already chatted with you about some of the changes, but just in case people haven't had a chance to connect yet around some of this stuff, just wanted to offer some quick updates. So wanted to check in with all of you. I know we have been talking about changing kind of how we make that initial interaction with clients when they get referred by 211. And some of the regions, I think it was out of New Haven from Essence's work and Bobby Joe's work, saying, you know what, it's a lot quicker and faster for us to send them an email initially to introduce the program. You know, be very clear, this is what I need from you to determine eligibility, and then help that household move on through the process. So I'm just wondering, for you guys, you know, are you using that process where really email is the first point of contact? How's that going? Are there changes that we need to make from your perspective?
Are you asking me?
Well,
oh, okay. Well, to my knowledge, how it's been going so far, it's been very easy for Bobby Joe to navigate who is responsive and who's not responsive as far as to the program. Like, we get a quicker response on knowing if we're going to be able to get them over to case management, or if this is going to be the mediation case, or if they're just simply not eligible, just off of looking at the information. And the first shot of us knowing if they're eligible or not is actually getting over the notice to quit. And that's how we're actually able to deem, because they're quicker to send that over before the other paperwork first.
Cool. And it sounds like, you know, some of the value is that, you know, when someone first gets you on the phone, they want to tell their whole story, right? And everything that's going on. And sometimes that can really bog you guys down in time. Not that you don't care or want to hear about it, but it can take a lot of time when you have five or six other people that you need to call back that day. So just from a time saving perspective, Is that been helpful for you? Nico, were you going to say something? I thought I had seen you go for your mute button at one point.
Yeah, I usually do the email or, you know, have call them. You know, just get a brief information history on their background a little bit, even though I already know, but, you know, just to hear from the client itself and what they're currently going through is a big thing for me. You know, that's one of the things that I like to initiate first with a client.
Sure. And probably by the time they're coming to you, they've already been determined to be eligible. So like in your role, like you really do need to have that more of that in-depth conversation to say like, what do you need and how are we going to be able to help you? Yeah.
Yeah. And just kind of get a feel of, you know, the person that I'm going to be working with, you know?
Yep. All right. So I'm going to assume that process is going okay, that it's helping save time. I'm hoping, I know you all have been asking for some fillable PDFs for quite some time, and I've had some technical challenges on my end getting that done, but I have finally figured it out. So by end of next week, I'm hoping all of the forms that you guys are using will be in fillable PDFs, because I know that was some feedback early on just about people more likely being able to do a fillable PDF on their phone. You know, it's easier as opposed to doing a Word document sometimes. So, the other thing that we also talked about last week, but wanted to talk about here again today, is just around particularly for those of you in a case management role, is using HMIS to do case notes anytime that you have an interaction with a client. One, I think case notes are important for all of us, certainly because I get calls, 211 gets calls, all of you get calls, and sometimes people are calling anybody and everybody who they think can offer them assistance. And so having that case note about what happened in your last interaction is super, super helpful, particularly for me when I get attorneys or state reps or gosh only knows who calling me. It's really helpful to have something that I know is most current. I wanted to take a minute also, because some of the other work that we want to capture is really around, are you guys seeing my HMIS screen?
Yes.
Okay, great. I never know when I click around if it's going to pick up the share, if it's still sharing the old screen. So again, like in your role, this would be under your DOH eviction prevention ESG role in HMIS. Case notes are down under case management, and then there's a case note section here. And then to add a new one, you would just click add new, type in your subject, and then you always want to make sure that you are sharing the note down at the bottom, because otherwise people that are not connected to your particular login will not be able to see it. So you always want to make sure that you're sharing it, and then you'll just save it down at the bottom. You know, again, we had talked about kind of that data assessment plan kind of format for the case notes. But there's also another portion in HMIS that particularly for case managers, when you're working with someone, it's under this services. And what we want to be able to capture ideally is the number of hours of case management that you're spending with someone. Because I think long-term, what we're trying to figure out like what's the trend and what's the need to be able to prevent people from entering into homelessness, right? And so I would expect that if we have people with really high needs, that we're going to be spending more time with them. And if we have people with lower needs, you know, maybe they just need some housing search, maybe, you know, they can do most of the work on their own. You know, I would expect that the case management hours spent with them would be lower. But I think what we're trying to figure out is like, what's that right sweet spot of what we should be offering to someone to prevent them from coming in to homelessness? And also, I think as we talk about trying to balance caseloads for people, you know, also trying to figure out like, you know, what's the number of hours that maybe we should be assessing or estimating for upfront when someone first comes in for services versus someone, you know, when they're starting to phase out of the program at month three, or if you're continuing with them in case management beyond, you know, just receiving rental assistance. So it's important, particularly because this project is really still a model for us as a state. Important for us to try to capture some more data so that we can make the project better in the long term. So there's functionality in HMIS, and again, it's under case management services, and I will get the screenshots of this out to you guys. Screenshots, and then what you'll do is click on add new. And I believe this gentleman, our test client, was enrolled in the MMW region. So it should pop up, MMW Can Addiction Prevention.
Francis.
Join the meeting.
There we go. So you should be selecting something that's under CV, ESG, HP for the project, whatever region you are in. But then you can see, like, based on what project you select, the service types are going to change. So here, if you were doing case management services with them, you just click on case management, you're offering the service today, you did half an hour, or I'm sorry, you met with that person for an hour, you met with that person for half an hour, whatever it might have been. And then this is where you would be able, under unit value, to record if it was, half an hour, or an hour, and then you're able to save it down at the bottom. Any questions about that? And then you'll see that it populates up here under service type.
Lee,
and again, this is
can you please make the font a little bigger on this? For these eyes that are not as young as yours. Is there any way to just make it a little
bigger? Help. Is that a little better?
Yes. Thank you. Okay. A lot better.
My pleasure. Do you want me to go through it again?
So, no, that's fine. That's fine.
So
for the services, is that every time we have contact with the client, we enter that? Also, as well as the case note?
Yeah, please.
Okay, because I wasn't doing that part because I never knew that I was supposed to be filling out that part.
Yeah, and that's okay. Yeah, I think it's one of those things that when we... Oh, Maria, can you mute everybody? Thanks. I'm just getting a little feedback. It's one of those things when we were... honestly, first starting the program, right? Like there were a lot of details that I think people are just getting adjusted to and familiar with and comfortable with, like the basic kind of flow of the program. So I think this is not something that we have highlighted. I think some agencies, if they are using HMIS for other programs, they're more familiar with this particular functionality and tracking data in this way. But I don't think we have not been consistent across all the agencies with that. So just trying to bring us back to that piece of data collection. Any other questions about this? And like I said, I'll share the screenshots as well. Just other updates. We've been talking about a critical time intervention model for case management. Are people familiar with that term when I say it, or is that something that's brand new for people? So critical time intervention is really it's a model of case management where we really front load services for people when they first come into the project, because we're expecting that they're going to be of higher need, higher acuity levels. And then over time, the goal is to taper down those services so that people, as they start to exit, we're connecting them to other services in the community. We're helping them to stabilize in their housing, make those connections, and the time that you spend with people as they start to exit the program becomes less and less over time. So, I think what we're seeing with this project is like you're getting a lot of high acuity, high need people. And it's really hard if you have a caseload of 30 people with intensive needs to meet those needs for everybody. So some of the purpose of the training is to talk about the model, but also to talk about how to weigh a caseload so that you have a mix of people who are just coming in, high need people, kind of medium need households, and then lower need households who are kind of on their way of being done from your services. So CCH is going to do that training for us on the 28th. I'll be inviting your supervisors as well because, you know, it's really a team approach, right? They're going to help you to weigh your caseload, help you to figure out like who fits that high intensity need versus people that we can start to slowly reduce the amount of contact with. So that's going to be on the 28th from 1 to 10. That's during our normally scheduled time together, so it won't be, you know, anything additional that you need to worry about in your schedule. And then lastly, you know, we've been meeting pretty consistently and regularly for the past 6 months now. It's hard to believe, but I think we're at a point where we can start to reduce our frequency of meetings even less, down to once a month. You know, again, kind of with the purpose and goal of all of you being able to talk with each other about challenges or, you know, needing to brainstorm ideas that you see, also offering some brief updates, that kind of information. But I think now that, you know, everyone's kind of in the groove with the program, I think we can start to reduce that time starting in June. So we'll plan to keep the second Friday of each month on the calendar. And again, I'll delete some of the calendar invites that are on there now. So you'll see those cancellations and you'll know what it's about.
Lee, you have a hand raised by, I believe it's Chantel.
Thanks. Go ahead, Chantel.
Hi, so I was having some connection issues. When you said need to enter services, where are you speaking of? In HMIS?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And where is that? Where's the ability to do that?
Yeah. I'll go back and show you real quick, Chantel.
Thank you.
Yep. So it's if I can get the right screen. So it's under case management. On the left-hand side, under services, and then you'll get this screen that pops up, and then you'll click on add new, and then you will enroll in the particular project for your region under project, and then a list will populate for that project. So then you would see case management services. You would leave the unit at one and then the number of hours that you spent with that person. So if it's, you know, half an hour, you would leave that there. And again, that just helps us to kind of determine, you know, this person, and, you know, we can do all sorts of things with that data. You know, we could look at their acuity score, how many hours of case management service did they receive? You know, someone with a higher acuity score having a higher, I would expect a higher need for case management time versus someone with a lower acuity score. So we can look at all sorts of things if we have that data. Any questions, Chantel? Are you good with that?
I just have a quick question. If we're writing case notes and every time we have an interaction with the client, and our case note says what we did, the client's response, the plan, isn't that kind of like redundant as to that?
It's not, because the case note's really about your narrative and what happened. This is allowing us to see, I spent an hour of time with that person. So it's capturing two different things. Does that make sense?
Okay.
All right. So, Next is just around mediation. I had sent out an email about this, but just want to make sure that everyone saw it. So we should not be using voluntary agreement forms at this point in time. Any time that we're requesting rental arrearage, it really, like, that process really needs to be mediated by either Berta and her team through Quinnipiac. It has to be done through, if they are coming in with a legal aid attorney, you know, that agreement needs to be kind of negotiated with the attorney. Or if someone's coming in already, they've already gone to court and they have a court stipulated agreement where it spells out, you know, this tenant is going to pay $3,000 in rental arrearage. We really need one of those three documents to be able to request rental arrearage to a landlord. And that's really to protect, I think, both the tenant and the landlord, because there's lots of nuance to what can be paid or what should be paid when a landlord's requesting arrearage. And I think Berta and her team have done a really lovely job of crafting those mediated agreements so that it's really reflective of what both the tenant and the landlord need and want. So I want to make sure that we're not using those voluntary agreements anymore. I've taken them out of the Dropbox. If you have them on your files, please delete them. I know when we're sending the FSR request to ACT, you know, it specifies, you know, please submit the voluntary agreement. The voluntary agreement, like the spirit and intent, is that there's an agreement between both the landlord and tenant. It does not have to be that form. That form is really meant to be a sample and a placeholder for Quinnipiac's agreement or an agreement that's done with the attorney or a court-stipulated agreement. Any questions about that?
You have another hand raised, Lee, from...
Chantel. So if the client comes in with a court stipulated agreement, do they still need to be referred to mediation or legal aid?
They do not need to be referred to mediation because they've already gone through a court process, right? They've already come up with an agreement and an expectation from the court.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I do have a question regarding the mediation process.
Hold on one second. Okay. And what I will say is, like, that court stipulated agreement needs to be uploaded to HMIS and needs to go to ACT so Maria can look for it. And I'm sorry, Essence, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, I have a question regarding this whole mediation process because I don't know if Bobby Joe has brought it up when you had meetings with the managers, but I'm noticing a lot of the legal aids that are doing the mediation process between the landlords and the tenants is that they're incorrectly filling out the paperwork and or not understanding how the paperwork is to be filled out. And we're getting kickbacks. For a perfect example, I just got an email regarding the Morrison case. And now, because the paperwork was initially filled out incorrectly, or she didn't understand things and stuff, and now the landlord is getting fussy, she doesn't want to participate with the program anymore, and she doesn't want the tenants to stay there.
So, I guess a couple. So the attorney filled out paperwork on behalf of the tenant incorrectly.
Yeah.
So,
like the mediation paperwork that's actually needed to get the ball moving, like preferred, that would be going over to Quinnipiac to, like, you know, usually will a regular mediation go to Quinnipiac and then Berta will do everything she's supposed to do. But they're filling out the HPP calculation sheets wrong.
I think the attorneys should not be filling out the HPP calculation worksheet. I think if anything, you know, you could fill it out for them, and because this is what I'm guessing happened, so tell me if I'm wrong, Evan. It's like the attorney's calling you saying, I'm going to court tomorrow. What's an allowable expense, or like what can I present to the landlord? Is that right?
That in its own. And then also they're putting in their own number. So if they agree on like a different stipulated amount, so say if the tenant's current rent is $1,500, but they agree on just doing $1,000 on the rent, which is like, it's no clear cut on what they're supposed to be doing. And I thought that they've actually been told what they were supposed to do. That's according to what I've been heard. They've been told on how to do it and what is actually needed. And every time we go back and review the paperwork, it's incorrectly, or we get kickbacks from ACT stating that something is incorrect.
So I think like ultimately you're responsible, right? Like you're responsible for making sure that that paperwork's done correctly. I think to alleviate that, like I would say to the attorneys, like they should not be filling this out, or in advance of court, you know, you could give them maximums of what's allowable.
We explained this to them several times, and it just seems like they do what they want to do.
Well, then they're not. I mean, reality is, then they're not going to get money for their tenant. You know, if they're going outside of the parameters, and if there's particular, you know, if you can give me after this particular instances or cases, like I'm happy to reach out to New Haven Legal Aid and we can have some conversation, or if it's one or two attorneys in particular, you know, I can address it with them.
Oh, it's several. It's majority. It's majority of them. I will say that me and Bobby Joe have interactions with Amy Marks,
yep.
Amy Epler, Epler-Stein, and Elizabeth Rosenthal. Those are my main three.
And not to interject or to interrupt anybody, because I know other people have their hands raised, but I just want, in addition to what Essence is saying, this is Destiny, the Jesus from HPP. I think all the legal aids in general need a retraining. I was speaking about this with Allison, maybe providing them a PowerPoint like this that kind of goes over HPP policies and how we go about allocating funds. All of them have this understanding that because we can allocate up to $8,000, that because we have this stipulation for up to, that they can give the client the full $8,000, and they're making these deals with landlords on behalf of the mediation process to which they're mediating, and causes a lot of tension with each case, with each landlord, with the clients. So I think if we could provide them a PowerPoint presentation like the one that we're viewing now, strictly on HPP, I think that would go a long way and would be a great benefit.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Destiny. So statewide legal services, which is kind of the educational branch for the legal aid entities around the state. They did a training with the attorneys on Monday or Tuesday of this week. So again, like more detailed slides about what the program entails, how we calculate financial assistance, you know, those bits of information. I think what we've always communicated to the legal aid community is that they need to be in contact with all of you, and that they need to be working in partnership with you, right? Because obviously, like what you guys are identifying is that people make assumptions that are incorrect, and then it puts the tenant in jeopardy because they've made assumptions, or they try to push the process faster than we can sometimes move it. So if there are particular instances or cases, you know, you can always feel free to loop me into those. And then we will try to work it out with the attorneys.
You have two hands raised, Lee. You have Chantel and Jessica, hands also raised.
So Chantel, do you want to go first? Did you have something else?
Yeah, so I have maybe two concerns or something that I would like to discuss is that sometimes, well, I know that clients have been getting my phone number, the work number, and I never met them. And they're saying that they got it from 211. That's one thing.
So let's hold that to let's hold that. So I think what we've told 211 is that if someone's calling back, if they've already gone through the process and someone's calling back and they say, I didn't hear from Chantal, they are directed to the point of contact for the region. That person for South Park is Lorraine. So if 211 is providing a number, it would be Lorraine's number.
Oh, because yes. I've never met them and they get my number.
Yeah.
People get my number all the time.
Same here.
And I have no idea how they get it.
Then the second thing is that I keep getting the same sentiments from different clients about legal aid not calling them back within a timely manner. And I could understand that legal aid is swamped. However, when it's not within a timely manner, it's different clients and they're facing eviction that produces a lot of anxiety. So I do get it.
I have to agree with Chantel on that. I'm getting complaints about legal aid not calling them back either.
So a couple things.
I also have to agree with Chantel on that. There's been a couple of times I had to go off the reservation and refer people to folks that could actually help them.
So reality is that legal aid is constrained just like we all are. And so legal aid typically gets far more referrals than they can support. So I think, if I'm remembering correctly, I think it's only like 10% of cases that they actually represent compared to the number of referrals that they receive. And I know in Hartford, I will reach out to Journey Home because in Hartford, there's some direct funding to support kind of like a fast track, so to speak, for some of the referrals that you guys are making. But again, realistically, I don't know if they would even be able to accommodate all of those referrals, despite having funding to support them. So it is possible. I would like it for Journey Home. Okay.
So then my next question is, if they're only going to take a certain percentage, then why are we referring everyone?
So for, the goal of the program initially was to really rely on mediation, to take mediation through Berta and her team at Quinnipiac to alleviate some of the burden on the court system, as well as our legal system and our attorneys, because we, didn't expect that they would have capacity to be able to support them. To support everyone who's currently facing eviction.
Some clients need legal representative because their landlord has legal representative. And then in my own mind, once the landlord files those eviction papers, it becomes harder for me as a case manager to find the client housing because they already have that eviction or even eviction paperwork in the process, and then landlords don't want to rent to people who have an eviction or even an eviction in process. They don't want that. So then it becomes hard for me to find them somewhere to live.
Yes, that is the reality. Yes. So, I think some of this and what we've talked about all along is that, sometimes evictions will happen for people because we're not able to prevent it. And I think that's the hard reality, is that these are tenants who are at high risk. The notice to quit does make it harder for them. So, are there things that we can do with their current landlord to try to resolve that scenario? Sometimes there are, sometimes there aren't. Berta, is there anything else that you want to say about mediation?
Speaking of legal aid, right now I have a case that a tenant, when I first spoke to him, I was under the impression that he did not understand what I was trying to relay to him, and he needs legal aid. I can't sign a mediated agreement with a person who does not comprehend what is going on. So we're waiting to find out if he's going to get legal representation. I've spoken to the property manager, but ethically, I can't have him sign a mediated agreement. He doesn't understand what's going on. He really does not.
Sure. And no conservator or anything for him, I'm assuming.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great point. You know, I think there are times where you do need that attorney, right? Because like you mentioned, Berta, the person is not really able to represent themselves, or, you know, there's certainly instances where the landlord's adamant that the person wants to be out, has to be out of the apartment. And so if the tenant is saying, no, I want to stay, you know, you do need sometimes that legal representation if the landlord's going to pursue things in court, regardless of any other interventions that we try.
Just to give a quick suggestion, because I was in the restroom, but I had heard the I don't know who spoke, who asked the question about legal aid, so my apologies. But what I have done is I don't even consider statewide legal aid as a legal aid at all anymore. I don't even consider them as an option, just as you said, because they're completely up to capacity and they're not going to respond to our clients anyways. I suggest looking for legal aid services for low-income families within your district. I utilize New Haven Legal Aid a lot. Those are basically the only people I utilize, period. And like I said, even though they don't do a lot of the mediation, right? And I, at this point, I'm going to make a PowerPoint myself on how to go ahead and go about this, because I feel like they need it. And if no one else is going to do it, then I have no problem doing that. But I would definitely utilize those services. I also will recommend for the clients who may not qualify for New Haven Legal Aid, I have one client now who does not qualify, just showing up in court with them as a witness to their case and trying to basically plead on their behalf, kind of being a fake legal aid, I guess you can say, because you literally don't have the legal parameters to do the work legal aids do. But sometimes just showing up in the court appearance and being able to speak to the judge yourself sometimes gives them a stronger chance as a case manager. I've done this twice already with two of my clients, and I've been able to prevent them from being evicted by participating in their court cases. So that's the only other thing that I could recommend for those districts that, you know, are strongly utilizing the state legal aid services that haven't been responding back.
Yeah, that's great, Destiny. I think, you know, some of it's really that you're there to be an advocate for your client and your family, right? Or the family that you're working with. And that's, I think, what really good case management does for people. It's that piece of advocacy for if they have questions, then you're able to help them, right? Or like help them understand the process from a non-legal point of view.
Lee, also what we are also seeing now with the mediations is that we are scheduling more than one mediation with the landlord and the tenant because they have unresolvable issues, communication issues, lease violation issues, nuisance. The rent is an issue because the arrearages are so high. But if you don't resolve all the other issues, or at least try to, the tenant is still going to be evicted. So some cases are requiring a mediation before we even start discussing the money.
Yeah, and Berta, do you, and I think that's been really great. It sounds like, just in terms of relationship development and helping people to understand the process when you start to set it up in two meetings when necessary for people. Do you want to talk a little bit kind of about what we were thinking for the landlord or the tenant when they say initially, nah, I don't want to participate in mediation. I don't like the sound of that.
Well, Brendan, if they don't want to, you know, we have the contact information for the tenants and the landlords, then Brendan is willing to reach out to them to explain the process and to say the benefits of mediation. And the landlord's attorneys that we've been working with have been great. They're actually fair. I even had an attorney, the tenant's arrearage is extremely high, who even said, I don't want the state to throw away good money if this is really not going to work. So the landlord's attorneys that I have been working with recently are very fair also to the tenant. And if they feel that it can't work, they're even willing to take a little bit of money so the landlord can get some relief and then have an exit plan so that the tenant can leave.
That's great. And then one of the other things that we have added to the smart sheet is to flag those instances where either a landlord or tenant has refused to participate, at least initially, right? Like when they're talking, say like with you, Christina, or, you know, or Glorimar or Juanita, when they say, nope, that's not for me. Like we want to track that in the smart sheet, because it will trigger an alert to Berta and her team, that there might need to be some more follow-up and some more, dedicated conversation about what mediation can offer. Cause who can explain it better than the people that are actually doing it themselves. Right. So we want to be able to try to have that secondary conversation with the landlord or tenant to say like, no, this is what we think, right? It's not just about, the money, but if there's a willingness, like we can try to get to an agreement that works for both of you. And quite frankly, like from a landlord's perspective, it's a whole lot more cost effective because they don't have to worry about court fees or attorney fees, you know, if they choose to proceed through the court process.
Jessica still has her hands up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jessica.
Hi, so I have a few things I wanted to ask about. So first, with mediation, you mentioned that if they already have a stipulated agreement that we shouldn't refer them to mediation, but I've had several clients that are already like that far into the process. And I'm just wondering if like we could negotiate for them to either stay in the short term past whatever the agreement is, or if the landlord does agree to still let them stay, if we should be referring to mediation. And if not, then I'm not sure what to even do for those clients because case management's already full and there's like not much that I can even do for those clients at that point.
Sure. So I would say if someone's coming in with a stipulated agreement, sending them to mediation is not a requirement, right, to request rental payment for them. But in that instance, if you're seeing like, hey, maybe there's additional benefit, or maybe, you know, maybe they didn't think about this angle when they went to court, I would absolutely consult with Berta to get her take on it. And then if you guys think, you know, hey, maybe this can work, let's give it a shot. There's nothing that would prevent you from referring and having another mediated conversation if you think it's going to be beneficial to the conversation.
Okay,
does that help to clarify?
Yes. And if the client has a subsidy, but they really have to relocate, like there doesn't seem like there's another option, are we still only able to do the one-time back payment? Or can we assist with them moving forward?
Yeah, only the one-time back payment for people that have the subsidy. And I guess I'd want to know more, particularly, you know, are there other things that we can try with that subsidy provider or the housing authority to try to make it work? Because we don't want that person to lose their subsidy. If there's more things going on in that apartment where there's nuisance or, you know, complaints about like drug activity, people living in the apartment that shouldn't be there. You know, you name the list of behaviors that could qualify under nuisance. I honestly don't know how much we would be able to offer to that person. You know, again, but all we're allowed to do is just the one-time arrearage.
Okay, and the last thing I wanted to bring up is there is now just a growing list of people that need to relocate but don't have any support in doing so. And it's just very difficult for them to find any apartment to move to, and they don't really have any other choice. And case management, as I said, is full and has been full. So I'm just wondering about like the wait list for case management and how that should work with these people, because it's almost like 20 people now that are just kind of on their own, I feel like.
Yeah, so I would say, Jessica, like in Fairfield County, I know this has happened up in the Northwest as well, that there's some local meetings happening, right, where you all get to sit together as a team and be more thoughtful about like what the needs are and what we can offer to people. I would bring that question to your local meetings, because right now, like reality is every meeting I sit in, all we talk about is landlord engagement and the lack of available units, and it is across the state. And so that availability might be a result of like just high cost rental markets, right? Like in Fairfield County and what's affordable, it's because landlords have gotten burned because of the moratorium. So they're reluctant unless they can see some proof that there's a reasonable expectation of income going forward. It is literally brought up in every single meeting. So you're not alone. The people that you're working with are not alone in the challenges of finding those units. You know, my best offer right now is really trying to work with housing navigators that you might have within the Fairfield County region to help identify affordable units. Or start to talk to people about non-traditional units, like renting a room, sharing an apartment with someone, just to make things more affordable for them. You know, I mean, that's really kind of what we have to offer people. It's not maybe great, or it might not be their first choice, but that's really the most we've got.
And Lee, just to piggyback on what Jessica said. Now, I know that we've been having our local meetings amongst Fairfield, like me, Allison, Bobby Joe, Destiny. We've been having our meetings regarding the waiting list for case management and stuff. And we were advised to have them refer over to, I'm not going to be at, to, is it Community Action?
Yep.
In the meantime,
yep.
Now when I have people that actually get that automated message that, you know, they're in a waiting list and stuff like that, that Allison has drafted out, I have my clients calling me back, basically begging me like, well, what am I supposed to do now?
Well, and I think some of it is like, you know, just because they don't have access to a case manager, you know, I think some of it's like level setting with people, right? Like these are people they have found apartments on their own before. You know, they have that ability. It's much harder, but I think like being honest with them, like just because someone gets referred to like Mika or Stephanie for services doesn't mean they're automatically going to like magically pull an apartment out of their hat for that person to be able to move into. And I think sometimes people like have that expectation, right? Like, oh, I'm working with a program, they're going to find an apartment. When reality is, you know, you might be able to give them some leads, but they've got to do the work just as much as you. So I mean, unless someone has a better answer that's worked, I think it's about level setting and being honest, because like someone, you know, they may not be eligible for case management services, but if they came back to you, Essence, and said, oh, I just found an apartment, you know, you're still going to help them and process payment for a security deposit and first month rent. Like we still have that ability to do that.
Lee, this is Julius. Before you go on to the next subject, is it possible that we could get slides on this conversation?
I will do my best to draft notes on the conversation, and I'll send out the slides that I'm sharing today.
Okay, and that's including a PowerPoint, correct?
Not all of this, Julius. Some of this is just off the cuff because of everyone's good questions.
Yeah, but you have such excellent cuffs.
You guys are probably better. You're doing the work. All right. So, so again, anything about the updated functionality in Smartsheet, right? And like some of this is, if someone denies mediation, like we're not taking no as our last answer. You know, we're gonna try to let Berta or Brendan work some of their magic and see if we can offer intervention. So, all right. And then last but not least, I just want to again highlight, I think Maria was putting something. Oh, Dave, thank you. If you could share your notes, I would be grateful. And that would be a huge time saver. Well, thank you. So I know Maria put some stuff in the chat on this before when we first started the meeting. But just again, wanted to highlight a couple of things on the ACT payments. Don't blame Maria if she rejects any of your payments. She's just doing what I've asked her to do. So she sometimes has the unpleasant job of carrying out my dirty work because she's seeing all of your requests. So don't yell at her, yell at me. So just a couple of things to highlight. ACT is not able to pay rent in advance. So they could pay May's rent now. I think we're creeping up on the calendar about a window of time frame for June rent. I'll talk about that in a second. But they can't pay July or August now. So if you're working with a landlord, you know, again, let them know that we can't pay the money up front. And that's really because of accounting principles that ACT has to follow. I just sent out this morning my latest and greatest update. You guys must think I love forms and paperwork because that's all I do and send you, but an updated financial service request. So we are going to ask that your supervisors sign off on those requests before they go to ACT. Just again, so that they're kind of cross-referencing. It's always helpful to have another set of eyes. Because it's easy, frankly, I do it myself when I'm not paying attention to make data entry errors when we're submitting some of those financial service requests and making sure that all of the documentation aligns from like what's on the paperwork to what we're actually entering into the computer. So asking that your supervisors sign off on those. And when requesting future payment, just to get those tickets into ACT by the 20th of each month. So I would say, Maria, tell me if I'm wrong, if you submitted those FSRs like for future payment between, say, the 15th and the 20th of the month, that should be a good time frame. So like if I'm paying June's rent or requesting June's rent, to get those tickets in somewhere between like the 15th and the 20th of the month.
Yeah, from the 15th to the 20th, if you're submitting for June, beginning on June, that'll be fine.
Yeah. Does that make sense to everybody? You know, and some of it, like I'd ask that you work with your supervisors to figure out what the right, like workflow is for your particular agency and your staff, and how you and your supervisor might want to work together on that process when requesting future payments. Because it's okay, I mean, it's okay if you went into HMIS and entered the data now, you just can't submit the ticket to ACT because otherwise they're going to reject it.
Can I just ask a quick question? And I did ask this to ACT representatives in the last meeting that we had. But I think this is getting I don't understand, but I think this is going to be pretty outrageous for us to continue to have to wait for at least like 2 to 4 weeks and now maybe even longer to get things like application fees covered and storage units covered. I have a client who I put in paperwork for a storage unit like 3 to 4 months ago already, and it still hasn't been covered. And the client needs to get back into the unit, and because it's not been paid, they're not allowing her back in. She just got a job that I was able to help her get, and now she doesn't have clothes to be able to go to work.
So Destiny, yes. It's really hard to talk about specific cases without the details in front of us. So can you just send us an email to, is that okay, Maria, to Maria and I, or to the, like with the details?
Anything that she has question on, she should send it to the ACFUNDS email, and it should be able to get an answer there.
Okay, can you drop the email in the chat? That way I can send an email now, because I was also going to say, Amy, in addition, you know, I know this is a pilot program and we're still discussing how it's going to evolve and change and do what needs to be done and all of that good jazz. But I just want to be very realistic that we, each of us individually in this conversation, have a caseload of 30 people who we now have to case note for and to service notes for and other things per our agency for. And now in addition, try to send all the paperwork necessary for ACT payments before May 20th, if we're going to ask for a June payout date. And I just want to be very realistic that within an 8-hour workday schedule, 30 people, that is not, it really is not realistic. I can be very honest and transparent. And no, I know everybody else here might feel that way, but I work way past 5:00 p.m. to get half of this stuff done. So that is just something that I wanted to highlight.
So definitely you need to bring that concern back to your supervisor and talk with Allison about it. But that's not really the purpose of these conversations. So requesting rental arrearage, again, like really separating out like what is rental arrearage compared to rental assistance and prospective rent going forward. ACT needs to have those two things separately. So rental arrearage you can request is one lump sum if you're paying over multiple months. I just ask that you really clearly label what the months are that you are requesting. And then the same for, you know, if you were to request future payment, again, like identifying that this is rent for June 2021. Rental payments in the future have to be done on a separate ticket from the rental arrearage. And again, just so that it's very clear when ACT goes in to look at that. And honestly, like it's also really helpful for me, I'm guessing for you as well, because if there was a question that came up 3 or 4 months from now, you've got to be able to go back and look at that and understand what you intended to do. So it's just helpful when it's all really clearly laid out. And then lastly, again, this is just how to submit that email ticket to ACT. Like community assistance is where you send the initial request when you do a ticket, as well as any, like prospective rents, when you request those going in the future, it all goes to community underscore assistance at actct.org. And Maria is also looking again for the subject line that is including HPP simply because they get many, many emails, right? Hundreds over the course of a month. And Maria gets all of the HPP tickets to process. So it really needs to be clear in there. Any questions about this? All right, you guys, I know we're right at time and you are all really busy. Thank you for the really good questions as always, conversation. Dave, thank you for the notes. We'll get those out to everybody as well as the PowerPoint. So have a great weekend, everyone. And I'll talk to you guys soon.
Hi, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.